commence primary ignition.
This is Star Wars.
Look out!
Core World News.
You may fire when ready.
From the bright center of the galaxy, I'm Grex Kondak, and you're listening to Core World News, your all new show made up coverage, the latest stories from around the galaxy. Welcome to a Fistful of Beskar special. Now I'm your host, Ben Grant Adam, to discuss Chapter 13, The Jedi.
All right. Thanks very much, Grex. And thank you, all of you listeners out there that are tuning in. We're going to catch up on the fifth episode of the second season of Mandalorian, titled The Jedi, also known as Episode 13?
Yes.
Or Chapter 13. So sorry. Pretty exciting. Blew my face off. How'd you guys, what'd you guys think about this one? Broadly.
I'm still reeling from the deepest of cuts that were relayed in this episode. It was miraculous. I mean, we got HK droids to Tython to you name it. There were so many interesting lore tidbits in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, this is the episode that I kept giving. Like, because I was talking about off air, we all knew we were getting Ahsoka this episode, or assumed based on all the hints that were on there. And so I got on my
named and all.
Yeah, exactly. And and the fact, they teased us a little bit with the last episode of not actually going there. But, I got on the elliptical, hit this thing to play at 5:30 this morning. And I was just like, all right, so this is going to be 40 minutes of me slogging on this thing I hate. And then I'm going to get to see Ahsoka. And then literally within a minute and a half, I'm like, wait, we're already a lightsaber was ignited within 15 seconds of the beginning of this episode. And I'm just I almost stopped exercising and just sat on the elliptical for the next 45 minutes. So I couldn't believe it. And then everything was I'm like, oh, okay. So we got the reveal for this episode a minute and a half in. And then it was reveal after reveal after reveal. It was pretty amazing for halfway through a season.
Yeah, that's the way I felt too. Was just I was I know I'm gonna get Ahsoka. I was just buckle up. I did the same thing where I watched episode 4 before I watched this one to get me fired up, which is good because it was short. And I had watched that 3 times already, so I'm all right, let's get through this, even though it was a fantastic episode. And then by the time it hit, I was I'm seeing lightsabers in live action.
Yeah.
And I was kind of blown away. I'm that's Ahsoka. And the Ahsoka looked great too. Rosario Dawson looked even better than I thought she would as Ahsoka Tano. And her voice was pitch perfect. And then I was and there's going to be a story on top of this. How do you tell a story? The whole story is Ahsoka, man. But I really love the story and the new characters and all that. Should we start from the beginning here and and go through it?
Yeah, I mean, again, spoilers. We already spoiled some. I think Ahsoka's not really a spoiler because everyone knew it was coming, but
spoilers. There's plenty more to spoil.
Yeah.
So we're going to do this one. Hopefully you've seen it at some point. And, people don't all listen right away, so people might be watching this later on down the line or listening to us later on down the line. Greetings to people from the future. That's how we roll, because I desperately need to get this stuff off my chest and talk to you about it. So, all right. So we get cold open Ahsoka in the forest, messing up some cool, hooded cronies, with great vocabulators, on Corvus. And there is a magistrate. We later learn her name is, Morgan Elsbeth. And she seems pretty vile. And, there's a siege of one, Ahsoka's attacking this walled city, and to try to gain some sort of information from Magistrate Morgan Elsbeth. Which is a great setup. It was kind of interesting and fun.
And then the
Mandalorian stumbles into the situation, goes to the town to find her, and hilarity ensues.
Yeah, that's a good. Yeah, that's a good. Now let's talk for half an hour about just that whole scene, because there's so much going on there. Again, Ben, you mentioned seeing lightsabers in live action. Part of me was always I love the fact that we're the show is not relying super heavy on Jedi or the Force, which are things I love, but it was refreshing to get a Star Wars story that wasn't like that, which is kind of why I really like Solo. Sometimes they still break to look at a different side of the galaxy. That being said, the second I saw a lightsaber, I got tingles, right? It's just amazing. And they look amazing. The sound was interesting to me. We can talk about the sound design on the lightsabers episode. They sounded more bass heavy to me. It was interesting.
Yeah.
They're very bass heavy. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts about that. You know, Ben, as a sound designer, or anyone else, you might have some thoughts.
I do. And also as like a lightsaber nut.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we're keeping score here, this is the fourth or fifth set of lightsabers she's owned.
Right.
So I think she's gotten pretty good at it. And I think they're just like, it's meant to, that low timbre is meant to exude power and show power and like, you know, masterful. She's mastered the process of lightsabers, and it is in her kyber crystals are one with her soul. And and she's cutting right through steel, which is like another person we've seen do anything that like that is like Rey, who was cutting through like a whole like, you know, stone thing. It's
right.
You have to be individually powerful and your lightsabers have to be powerful.
Her lightsaber sounds like it's the diametrically opposed to Kylo's, where his is very unstable.
Yeah.
I'm sure hers is very stable.
Like that's
felt like stability.
It's a room full of sharp chanting. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. That's a great analogy.
Her emerging and retreating into the fog, the atmosphere in this episode, the set design, remarkable. Like Corvus looks incredible. The planet, the petrified forests. And Ahsoka just emerges from the fog, ignites, a lot of igniting, and then shutting down the lightsaber over and over again, which was very interesting. Very different.
I was into that. Like, it made so much sense, and it's something we hadn't seen really before. And the use of him as like stealth was just great.
Yeah, I love that because her lightsabers are white. It's just an interesting kind of white light that illuminates Ahsoka. She looks incredible. Just how it catches Rosario Dawson's eyes. And again, just like the animation, her voice matches to that character, right? To Ahsoka. It's when the magistrate is saying, you know, how many lives will you will you allow sacking the city? And then she's like, I won't let you make that choice. That sounds like a line you'd hear from Ahsoka in the animated show. It was perfect. It was pitch perfect.
Yeah. I'd love to speak to that for a second, because the director of this episode was Dave Filoni. So, and I think the only one he's going to direct this season, I'm not quite sure, but
I think the only episode not written by Jon Favreau. This one was actually written by Filoni.
Oh, yeah. No kidding. Well, that makes a lot of sense, because I was like, if you squint, you're like watching Clone Wars, the animated series. And in that, you know, and especially like you were saying, Grant, her disappearing in and out of the fog was like, I feel like that would have been a classic sort of Clone Wars thing. It's just made it that much more powerful or effective or enjoyable in live action. It really does crank it up to another level. To see her tearing through these, you know, hooded bad guys is great.
Yeah,
it's like a lot of fun, and it's really cool looking.
Yeah. And I feel like there's a major connection to Princess Mononoke in this episode. I don't know if you are aware of that film or you guys have seen that, but the eponymous character, Princess Mononoke, Saan, that character, is very much like Ahsoka in this episode, in that she's attacking this Iron Town over and over again. And from these petrified woods, these burned forests, it's really fascinating.
Right, she comes out of the forest and runs the rooftops, and is just like. Definitely, I can imagine you've seen Princess Mononoke, right, Adam?
I mean, yeah.
I mean, it's probably one of the most popular or famous anime movies of all time. I think it's had a lot of crossover in pop culture because it was like voiced by a bunch of stars, like American. You know, stars. Billy Bob Thornton is one of the voices in that.
Yeah. Speaking of American stars, Michael Biehn.
Oh, yeah.
So
we're going to do Michael Biehn. All right. I was going to wonder if we're going to talk about him now or his amazing end in this episode. But like, again, another moment on the elliptical. Like, I was just like, oh, that's awesome, Ahsoka. Wait, is that Michael Biehn? Like, it took me a second. He's aged incredibly well, but incredibly hard at the same time. I can't really explain it. Like, he looks nothing like he used to, but he looks kind of perfect for this role. I don't know
who he is. Can you turn me in? Yes, I've never seen him before.
But you don't, because you're of my age.
All right. In the
80s. He was in every 80s. He was in every 80s. Basically, he was in every single Well, I can't think of his name now. James Cameron movie before James Cameron's ego outpaced his talent. And so he was in The Abyss.
He was
in Terminator. Okay. He was in Aliens. He was in Tombstone. I was talking to my wife about it. I love his character, Kyle Reese in Terminator, the first Terminator, and then one of the Space Marines in Aliens, because it's kind of the same character, which is like, I'm totally going to save this helpless woman. Oh no, I died. This helpless woman's actually going to kick everyone else's asses, and I'm just dying over here. Like it's kind of an amazing character.
It's on brand for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's in Favreau, I think he's like, I get to choose. I can pick any actor I want. Like, who is like just sits there and is like, who would be the wildest, like best, you know, who was my favorite actor growing up that I watched that I would love to just direct, you know, and he gets to pluck these people right out and use all of them.
Yeah. Do you want to hear a very short lived tinfoil hat moment in this episode before, again, spoilers, before Lang dies? I thought he was going to be Dengar.
Oh, really?
He had a Dengar-ish thing about him. Age-wise, he very similar.
His armor was similar, too, wasn't it?
And then I'm like, is this between Dengar and Rathgar Den? Is this like the midpoint?
Oh, we're going to see how that happens.
This is, again, when you're doing elliptical at 5:30 in the morning and not sleeping because of a crying baby, this is where your mind goes while watching The Mandalorian.
Was he named? Was his character named?
Yeah, he was named. I had it, and then I lost it.
You just thought. I didn't see his name.
Lang. L-A-N-G, Lang.
Wow.
Yeah.
A lot of Dengar letters in that name.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, but he's new. We can say that's a new character. Everyone, you know, they can't all be references, right?
Yeah. And a great character for this episode has one of my favorite exchanges and lines in the season towards the end, which is just like,
yeah,
this is not one of them. Like, it's just, it's so good.
Neither of us want to die here. That was a great duel. That duel that, like, obviously it happened later on, but like with him was just, it was a lot of words and posturing. It was like a classic old Western duel. And then like on the other side of the wall, you had like a classic samurai duel. It's like, that's the Mandalorian right there.
Exactly. It's like the most, like the two main themes boiled down, intercut. And I just, we'll get there again, but I mean, I guess maybe we could just close the loop on Lang now. But yeah, like, all I ever want in a movie for whatever reason is a quick draw. I just love quick draws.
Yeah.
It's so tense. It's basically the Western equivalent of Hitchcock's bomb theory, right? Where you just like, you know how that was going to end. There was no doubt that Lang was going to draw. But they just, Filoni did such a good job of showing the Mandalorian moving his hand further and further away from his blaster. And I'm like, don't do it. Don't do it, man. And like, it was just so tense and kind of perfectly plotted out. He must have watched a lot of Westerns to get that timing down. That was like the right amount of tension where you weren't just like, oh, come on now, versus just like, oh, that happened too fast. It was like exactly the pacing it should have been.
Yeah. And it was, I was happy for you in that, Adam. because I knew you were stoked, and I mean, obviously I was overjoyed with it too. And then they like put like an exclamation point on it when the HK droid comes over the fence and he's like, look out, and he just blows that guy away too with a quick draw, and you're like, all right, I needed
this episode pretty much crystallizes the fact that Mando is the best shot in the galaxy. Like, if Han's the best pilot, or Poe's the best pilot, Ahsoka's the best swordsman, Luke's one of the best Jedi swordsmen, Mando's the best shot in the galaxy.
Yeah, best quick
with a blaster.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been interesting to see if Cobb Vanth and Mando had to draw on each other, because I feel like Cobb Vanth can probably.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a good point, because that was so teased, right? They teased us in episode one of a quick draw and then finally delivered in episode five of the season. So that was.
It's just headshots, but it's deflected away, and then they just go get a drink.
Yeah.
yeah.
That cutting of the tension. Yeah, that'd be hilarious. Just. All right. So, yeah, I think we did actually spend about a half an hour on this section. I thought we were going to spend
14 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then, he decides to humor the magistrate, Mandalorian does, and is actually allured by the Beskar spear, which is an interesting MacGuffin of sorts that I think was going to pay off later.
Again, another Mononoke connection with the discussing a rare metal.
Oh, yeah.
It has a central to the story and things like that.
Yeah, and I mean, Beskar has been a character in this series, pretty much. It's like motivation for people to do anything. It's why he's constantly getting jumped. It's like a, you know, symbol of the Mandalorian power. It's a lot of Beskar.
And the music in that moment.
More than a fist
the magistrate. Oh, did you guys hear that music in that moment when he's talking to her and she says, "A Jedi plagues me. I want you to kill her." Do you remember that?
I remember the exchange. I don't think I caught the music, though.
Check out the music. It actually, again, another Mononoke thing. It sounds like the forest in that, when they first go into the forest in that movie.
Okay.
The music is almost the same, exactly the same. It's very interesting.
I wouldn't be surprised if he borrowed from it, because it was, this is a very tribal week of score in there. There was one that was so stirring that we'll get toward it. It's towards the end. And that, yeah. But again, actually, you know, he leans on his Ludwig Göransson leans on his like synthesizers whenever there's like a battle imminent, like incoming. Yeah. And that's like, they're all different and they all make me want to party. I just love them. And they had like the battle synthesizers going on, you know, leading up to the siege. But we get ahead of ourselves. He decides he'll play along because he's got to go find this Jedi anyways, and takes off into this forest, and then, so we all know what's going to happen, but we talked before this, and you guys said you missed it. I don't know if that's right or not, but they he enters near to where they told him to go, and there's a wide shot, and there's an owl perched on one of the branches, and owls in the Star Wars universe are generally called Convors, and there's one that sort of follows Ahsoka around. We could get more into that if anyone cares, but essentially in the Mortis arc, which I actually would like to talk a little bit about the Mortis arc today, because I just had a breakthrough.
All right. We're always down.
Yeah. I mean, so essentially, and I think I can
it's always on the table. The Mortis arc.
I think I can my point in three sentences. They go to Mortis. This is an arc in the Clone Wars with Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ahsoka. They go to Mortis. They find the father, the son, and the daughter. This is like a parallel plane of the Force or whatever. They represent the Force. There's the three of them. And the daughter dies first, which unbalanced the Force. It was like a mistake. She accidentally got stabbed, you know, that sort of thing. And so that was eliminated balance of the Force. Other stuff happened. Anakin essentially kills both the father and the son, bringing balance to the Force. And I never, like, that could have been the whole prophecy, is just those three episodes. Could have been the whole Chosen One prophecy. He's like, oh, he is the Chosen One. He did that. And that's the whole thing. But there's also like this layer of metaphor for like that arc to what happened in the original trilogy and Anakin's, you know, sort of arc there, where, you know, the daughter dying could be, you know, could represent a lot of things, his mother dying or whatever. And then, or him killing Padme Amidala. Anyways, I'm going down a really weird rabbit hole right now, so I'll stop while I'm before I can't see the top anymore.
What was the theory exactly that you said you had a theory?
Yeah, well, breakthrough.
That was it. My theory is that, like, that was the whole prophecy. It was just that episode. Like, what Anakin did there in Mortis was the whole prophecy.
That makes sense.
And it doesn't really matter what happened in the saga, even though it is kind of a parallel for the saga. I mean, when the son and the father die, I think that's when, like, Anakin kills Palpatine and dies himself.
Right.
And then because that's how he brings balance to the Force.
I mean,
so he kind of does it twice, but it was just the Mortis arc. If you haven't seen it, it's in Clone Wars, and it's wild, and it's like, it's makes your head spin, and it's very abstract.
I've kind of come around on the prophecy thing. One of my least favorite thing in any storytelling is prophecy.
Yeah.
Because you have one of two outcomes, which is either like clear resolution or like it's misread. Yeah. Right. And I'm like, you really can't do a lot with that. But I think actually Star Wars, in its really clunky, oh, well, it's actually when Anakin kills the Emperor. No, it's the Mortis arc. No, it's when you know, Anakin kills all the Jedi. Oh, no, it's actually when Rey does it. Like, to me, that is kind of the perfect metaphor for what a prophecy is. It's like when you read old Nostradamus, right? Like, you can take those words and apply it to so many things in history.
Yeah.
And I kind of like it that this is really just, this just demonstrates why prophecy is so unclear, right? Because you can interpret it in so many ways. And so there's like, in the Star Wars universe, there's seven different ways that the prophecy has been fulfilled, right? And I kind of love that. It's kind of where I've come around to it.
I totally agree. I think prophecy can be boring, but misread prophecy is super interesting. And then I think, other than that, you have man versus nature, like what Dune and things. There's other things that are super interesting in sci-fi, but I feel like prophecy, misread prophecy, and having vague prophecy, and having having history rewrite itself over and over again throughout a story is really interesting.
Yeah, and the fact that like if you go further in the future in Star Wars, I feel like the in the Star Wars universe would be having that debate about which one was actually the fulfillment of that prophecy, right?
Right, right.
And I love that
in Galaxy means to say it's the same.
And the Jedi and Sith perspective, or it adds a lot of
complexity. Yeah, very cool.
Very cool.
Right. So, big digression there, but essentially this Convor, this owl looking creature, has been following Ahsoka around since Mortis, because the daughter, who like would take the form of the Convor occasionally, infused her life force into Ahsoka to save Ahsoka's life. And ever since then, this Convor, which really a lot of people are theorize that is the daughter's like form now. She just like follows that, uses that Convor as her avatar to like to follow Ahsoka around and help her out, because she shows up and the Convor shows up in Rebels, and it has a name. It's Morai, M-O-R-A-I. I don't know. Anyways,
we should mention that it's green, right? And then that the flags at the end, the townspeople are green. Like there's a lot of interesting colors.
Yeah, and it's tough to tell on this shot, because it's like it's a wide, the Convor's in there for like five frames, and you can't really everything's dark, so it's tough to tell what the color is. It's just, I mean, they just used an owl. Yeah. You know, it was they didn't try to make it look spacey or anything, but a nice touch. Like I can hear Filoni being like, "Yeah, I need to get an owl in this shot." And
and everyone's like, and everyone's being like,
"Why?
Do we ask questions or just be like, okay,
all right?"
So you spotted this when Mando is walking through the woods.
I just saw it myself too. It was weird. It was literally because I have the episode playing on my iPad. Oh, didn't mean to advertise for iPads, but my tablet is playing it next to me as we're talking, and it's literally lined up to you talking about where it was in the episode to when it appeared. So it was kind of that's why I was like, I think you're talking to Siri.
So that when she swoops in, that reveal is pretty awesome. I saw it for the first time, and just this episode is so action packed, and the choreography is incredible. Mando grapples Ahsoka and then she leaps over that tree branch and then cuts the grapple and spins around. I was like, oh, this is like an animated show. This is like what Filoni's been doing in animation for years, but he's bringing it to live action, and the action is so high quality. The choreography is incredible.
It's storytelling through combat, right? Like you just see how equally paced these two people. I don't even say equally. I feel like Ahsoka Tano definitely has the edge, because he's very quickly going like, whoa.
He does not want smoke at
that's
that
the first time lose his cool a little bit, where he's just like, I'm gonna lose my head, literally, she's gonna behead me, like, let's just stop this now. The other thing is, like, this is totally an animated episode. This is also a comic book. This is the exact plot of every comic book superhero team up since 1963, which is two superheroes meet each other. There's a misunderstanding. They fight each other and they team up. Then it's the beef is squashed, and then they team up to fight something else.
Yeah.
To me, it's like you, Grant, you earlier said like man versus nature. You have like those seven storytellers, like man versus himself, man versus man versus nature. And then there's the superhero team up, which I think is the eighth storytelling that's been around in our modern storytelling history.
Right. I love, actually, that's one of the things I love about Mandalorian, is that like it's not trying to defy like modern tropes. It's just like, no, we're just using things that worked to tell this story, and it's going to stand on its own legs because it's Star Wars and it's
beautiful. They're tried and true ways to tell stories.
Yeah, exactly. So now they're together, and then let the exposition begin.
But first Mando to quell things is like, Bo-Katan sent me.
Don't kill me. Bo-Katan.
Yeah, your name's Ahsoka Tano. And she's like, huh. So
guys, this is, there were a lot of reveals in this episode, but just, this was a big milestone for just the season itself.
Yeah.
And I wish, you know, Ahsoka and the child have their moment over in the corner. And I wish we got a few more push-ins in that moment or just step two.
Yeah.
You know, just really play that moment.
Okay. I really wanted
to see that moment get played out.
Yeah. I'm 100% with you, Grant. I think Dave Filoni did a really good job on this episode. I think it's really well directed. I think there were a couple of misses, as there might be in every episode. And that was one to me is that, like, I felt like the moments between Ahsoka and the child, or by another name, I guess we're going to start using in a few minutes, was there, but not, I don't know. Like, it didn't, I was expecting more heartstring tugging or more something. And there's a couple there in this episode, especially through the second viewing.
Or a comedic or warming kind of push in where she's understanding him. She again, Dave Filoni uses his characters in very meaningful ways.
Yeah,
so it's brought in because she's a pivotal character for this series in that she understands the child. And she can commune with the child, which is awesome.
That's like if I had one critique for the episode, it's exactly what you were saying, Grant. It's like, I was just, there's something missing to me with some of those interactions.
I think it might be, you know, to be determined as we learn more about this version of Ahsoka, but because I'm sure she was directed through every minute, you know, every second of that. And like, this is what, you know, he decided on, this sort of like stoic, sort of thoughtful, peaceful conversation between.
No, it is absolutely perfect. Friends. And what follows is a cuteness overload.
Oh, yeah. With the hug.
She definitely had more moments that were like, and I think I really liked that, where, because I remember that first, when we're first exposed to Ahsoka, I was kind of like, are we just going to get super dour? Like, I am now an adult and I am now just this wandering, saving everything, and I have no lightness to me. And then once the child comes into play, she still has those moments where you're just like, oh, that's 100% Ahsoka from the Clone Wars, right? And it makes sense as an adult, those things would be less and less, but they're still there, and I appreciated that.
Right, because we get curious Ahsoka in this episode, which I love, when she's like, let's see what's lurking in his mind at one point. I was like, oh, that's so cool. We're getting curious because she's so curious in Clone Wars.
Yeah, I would describe her as deeply thoughtful.
Yeah.
Like, at this point, like, she's sort of almost like Buddha, where she's just, like, like you said, she is curious, but she's just, like, lets things happen and is thoughtful about everything that happens. And she's, only now she's very sure of herself. She can look inside herself, and she's wise now, and after all she's been through. And sort of, it gives her this real stoicism and confidence that's awesome. And she's great to see, and natural fruition for what Ahsoka should be.
Yeah. All right. I feel like we are not avoiding, but we're like,
we're gonna talk about the name in the room right now, the Grogu in the room.
Grogu. Yeah.
And I love that Mandalorian's reaction was the same thing as mine.
Yes.
Yeah, she was like, well, Grogu says that. I'm like, what did you just say?
Yeah.
What was that? Yeah, like, what just came out of your mouth? Was that a name? Did you guys expect to have Grogu named in this episode or any episode this season?
No, not at all. Not even a little bit. No.
No, I never thought he would be named. But his reaction to hearing his name that might be the most powerful image
Star Wars
ever conjured.
You could have made an argument at some point like, oh, maybe it's not really his name. We don't hear him say it. But you're right. That reaction solidifies that. And my favorite thing is I was watching this with my wife through the second viewing with closed captioning, because again, sleeping baby, and we were listening to it on low but sleeping, and throughout the entire episode it says the child coos, the child does this. Literally 2 seconds after she says Grogu, the closed captioning's changed to say Grogu coos. So it's so weird that seeing it like on the screen of like, that's Coos? The name.
It has a last name too?
No, like Coos, like a baby Coos. Like, you know, the name of your, like the name of half of your band. Sorry.
The good half.
The good.
So did you say Grogu with a K? Was that how it was spelled? Grogu.
I might have been saying
It's
Grogu. I may have been, I think I was hitting that G really hard that came across as a K, but it's Grogu.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I looked. It's already in Wikipedia now too.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was weird, and I don't mean weird in a bad way, but like that to me was the most shocking thing in the episode is that we got the name and backstory for Baby Yoda. And I'm like, I saw a couple things online today of spoilers of people like Grogu and like, yeah, nope, still calling it Baby Yoda. And I still feel I accept that his name is Grogu. I'm fine with that. I'm always going to say Baby Yoda as the name, I think. Right.
I have a koozie with Grogu on it and just as the child. And to me, it'll always be, you know, the child. I will say that, like, there's a lot of great acting performances in this show, but the best acting performance could be the poppet. Like Werner Herzog, y'all cowards, use the poppet. And he just ripped my heart out of my chest the whole episode, especially the second half, starting here, you know. It's like, like the little cooing makes every time you say his name, and then like the hug scene, and it's just heart-wrenching, and you can see, so it's like we've seen this story a bunch of times in the past, you know, 10 years or whatever, right? Fallen Order, right? We saw this with Kanan Jarrus and Cal Kestis, most notably, but lost their masters, you know, had to go into hiding and like, you know, be hunted. And, you know, and like, it's always like, okay, that's sad. That's really, I mean, it's a tough story. And it's like, wow, that really, you had to earn some character there. And we've seen it in the comics a million times, but like to have a baby go through that, like, or you spend 25 years like neglected in the arms of who knows what. Right. And it's just like PTSD. Like he was living with a bunch of weakway in like a bunker when we first see him in Mandalorian. It's like, he could have been, you know, treated as cattle or, you know, who knows what for how long.
You're right. It's so weirdly dark in a way that's good, but to the point where, like, in the past, I just convinced myself, it was a clone. It was something like this. But to have, like, a backstory and, like, to have a life prior to this, it's horrible. And in a good way, not a good way, but a good storytelling way, it's horrible. And I feel like, the saddest moment in this entire thing is when she's telling his story, and I want to we'll back up and tell the beginning of the story. But when she says, then it's just like, and then from there it's times are dark. I think she says, dark.
Yeah.
And like I'm like, oh, that's, and I almost want to swear real bad, but that's really rough. Like that is just like, it's just like, is it because like his life was just so, he was just like one of those like Russian orphans just left in a crib for like 25 years and
for 25, it's like taking like it's the just, orphan it's like, story oh, and finding boy. Another year to it. It's extra sad orphan story, and you're, I mean, you can't help but just you're just I don't know
heartbreaking.
It's extremely tragic, and just to know that he shares the fate of so many characters who we have seen, you know, escape the purge and the fall, the fall of the Jedi, and to know that he was a Jedi in training. On Coruscant. On Coruscant, and trained with many masters on Coruscant.
This is the element. And so it's time for a first round of a few, I think, this episode of wild speculation. Because there's a very key point that she makes when she's telling his story. He was on the Jedi Temple. He was trained as the Jedi Initiate before the Clone Wars. She specifically says he was taken from the temple and hidden.
Yeah.
So, from storytelling, we know that Anakin was told to go in and kill everyone, even the younglings, of which the child would have been one.
Yeah.
There would have been no reason to secret the child away from the temple prior to Anakin's arrival. Sure. So, the million-dollar question of the million-dollar questions of this episode to me is, who did that?
Yeah. I mean, I think probably the answer is some unknown Jedi. Like it was just some sort of leak in the hall. A bunch of people escaped that purge.
Yeah.
And he was one of them. And it's probably a character we don't know.
Could be a character we don't know. Any other thoughts?
I can't think of a character we do know.
Explored. I don't mind if it's never explored, but if it is explored, I would love to see a comic series. If they do a Mando comic, maybe that'd be fun to see.
I don't know how many council members were in the temple. I don't think any.
I don't think any. We know Bail Organa shows up, but he gets chased away pretty quickly, so he didn't have time to do it.
We know it wasn't Yoda. It probably wasn't Anakin.
Let's pause on that clip for a second. I agree, it probably wasn't Anakin, but you can tell a story where Anakin does that. Where Anakin
can't bring himself to
kill. Or Anakin can't do it. Yeah.
Do it. He can't do it. He can't kill Yoda or the equivalent of what looks like Yoda to him. So there's part of me, because we'll get to this at the end, I'm now convinced that we're going to see something that we speculated at. And now I'm like, well, if we're going to see that, we'll talk about what that is later in the episode, then why can't we see a flashback of Hayden Christensen raising his lightsaber and then walking away, right? Of just not killing this because this baby, right? This baby Yoda.
But then, like, killing, like, 20 human babies.
Yeah, I mean, he's still evil. Yeah, but they're not baby Yoda. Let's be honest here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Skywalker.
Yeah, exactly. He'd be like, "Oh, shut up," and then that would be it.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be interesting. I definitely have that note written down. Like, who was that? Because that's an interesting story.
Yeah.
But then I just again I think about the I'm like, oh, then what happened to that Jedi or person? And like, I mean, it could have been a servant or something. You know, like
totally
someone with a heart in that temple who was like, "I know how to get you." Oh,
I know who it is.
All right.
It's Jocasta Nu.
Oh, because she didn't get out. Yeah.
Yeah, she got out. You know, she got out. And that, where was she? She's a librarian. She wouldn't have gone anywhere. She would have been there when it happened.
Yeah. And like, she was.
Grogu.
Yeah. We definitely saw her come back in the temple, but we also saw her living by herself. I can't see Jocasta Nu creating this like secret fort and not bringing that child with her, you know?
Yeah, fair enough.
I don't know.
But.
So yeah,
Ahsoka then speaks about the Force for a little bit.
Yeah,
in that monologue, and separates it out from the Jedi again, like what Rian Johnson did so masterfully in The Last Jedi, where it's kind of like, you know, the Force is just an energy field outside of us that, you know, we takes a lot of training to use. It's not, it doesn't belong to the Jedi. It's not like just connected to the Jedi in any way. It's just, it's nebulous. It's all around us.
Totally. And I mean, it was a direct quote from Obi-Wan Kenobi, right?
Yeah, it's a living thing that connects us all. It's all living things. And I feel like it's also confirmed from all the EU stuff, right? Like, we see plenty of Force users that aren't Jedi, like the Night Sisters and et cetera. Yeah. Right, and so I like that storytelling. And my feeling has always been like, yeah, the Force exists whether or not they're a Jedi, right?
Right.
Yeah. Which is odd about the title for the seventh movie, The Force Awakens, but can dissect that at another point of time.
Right.
It's really the Jedi Awakened, but whatever. But yeah. I like that little like reminder and that little speech. I think you always need that campfire scene. And Grant, I think you and I have talked about campfire scenes in The Force Awakens. I feel like I'm coming down hard in Force Awakens, which is actually probably my top half or third of Star Wars movies. But like, I tend to like check out of that movie when we get like three campfire scenes in a row in that movie. But I love the campfire scene in this episode. Like, I just wanted it to be Ahsoka and Din Djarin talking.
Yeah. Well, they had a lot of work to do there, you know, heavy lifting for people that didn't know who Ahsoka was to try to make her seem important. I mean, obviously carrying lightsabers makes her important, but, you know, we had her recount Skywalker, where she, you know, she made it sort of like, oh, well, who's she talking about with the person that had fear in his heart and was a master Jedi and then terrible things happen, you know?
Yeah.
So
refers to him as the best of us.
Yeah, the best of us. I know she was, you know, so she's, if you don't know, Ahsoka's Tano is Anakin Skywalker's old sole Padawan. And only Padawan. And she did ultimately find out his fate becoming Vader.
Yeah. Amazing scene in Rebels. Like one of the most chilling scenes in the show, Rebels.
Yeah, where she, he loses half his mask and she can see, look into his eyes.
Yeah.
It's harder then. But,
right, because she eventually says to Grogu, "I sense much fear in you."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then she recognizes the connection between Mando and Grogu. And man, they have suffered so much trauma like this season and the last season. I mean, it's been a lot. They've gone through a lot together. And she mentions Anakin at that moment where she says, you know, I've seen what such feelings can do to a fully trained Jedi Knight. And you're like, oh, this is
right.
That's such a beautiful way to mention your connection to Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah.
And I feel like they showed a new side of the Mandalorian that they don't play up too much, except for that last scene with the wires, where like Mando is like in pure dad mode.
Yeah.
He's like, don't touch that. Put that here. I told you that stays in the thing. And like, you know, and then she's like, well, you know, he responds to you. He's like, well, that'll be a first time, like dumb dad joke. And like, yeah, you know, and yeah, which made this even harder. Cause I was just like, no, he doesn't need to learn how to use a force at all. That's fine. He needs to be with Mandalorian. Like, yeah. My soul could not take, you know, him going with Ahsoka. And if you asked me yesterday, I was like, yeah, that's a, you know, that makes sense. You know, I could see a way for that to happen. And it's like, as loving and wonderful character as Ahsoka Tano is, it's like, no, they are a clan of two now.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. This episode did such a good job of just illustrating that. I agree. Cause I almost exactly the same. I came into thinking, oh yeah, maybe, I mean, I don't think they would do it because you're not going to write off Baby Yoda. Like, you just can't.
Yeah.
But like, it kind of makes sense. Same thing coming in, and then there's some moments in this film, and they do one beautifully in a few moments we'll talk about, and just in that like wordless moment, I'm just like, no, like this is, they are bonded, like you can't separate those two.
Yeah, yeah, it's really, really sweet. I mean, I think, right, so we go through the whole they you know, decide he's not going to kill her, she's not going to train him, which is makes so much sense. Like, it's just, it makes so much sense.
I mean, yeah.
You know, we had talked about a bunch of ways that this could go. I knew that she would, you know, fall in love with Baby Yoda, but we didn't really talk about, at least in the past couple of weeks, about how Ahsoka would reject the call, unless I'm forgetting something, which I could be. Grant?
I just got a wild tinfoil theory for you guys.
Oh, that was the tinfoil.
So the moment we're at in the episode is that Ahsoka's training the child, or Grogu, and
yeah,
training with him, trying to get the...
Yeah,
hit Grogu to catch this rock, and then or float it back to her.
Yeah.
And next up, Mando tries his connection because he's not levitating the rock. So Mando, there's the little ball stick in the ship, yeah. And Grogu instantly takes it. You hear like the Mando death rattle or death whistle in this series.
The music cue is.
I have a theory like, that
success.
I have a theory that Mando might use the force by the end of all of this. At the very episode, I have a theory that Mando might use the force. Mando, the character, the Mandalorian.
Din Djarin might be force sensitive.
Yeah. Just in one moment, at one strange moment at the very end, he might use the force.
Grant, I started sixth sensing this thing. I had the exact same moment. Again, 5:30, lack of sleep, watching this thing on elliptical. I'm like, is there a chance it's always been Din Djarin that's been force sensitive?
Well, this is a role-playing game. He's the character you allow to use the force at like the very last.
So my crazy theory for like 5 seconds was every time the kids used the force, Din Djarin's been in the room. So I'm like, was it actually Din Djarin using the force? That does not work. That theory is bunk. But it's like, I did the exact
same. I've never thought that. I just thinking.
But I'm thinking, will you give him the
bizarre moment later? Possibly.
Speaking of musical cues, just to back up for a second, Yoda, we didn't really talk about it directly, but Yoda gets name checked. Did you catch when they named Yoda? They played a little bit of Yoda's theme.
Yes.
Yeah,
two
notes, but it's enough. Yeah,
there was also a time later. Yeah, there was a time later, I think, where she refuses the call the second time, and refuses to train him a second time. And there's like they just changed the last note, but it was like it was definitely a little call.
Yeah,
right. She's like I've only known one other species of his kind.
Yeah. I feel like he should have license like once a season to just use a John Williams cue. Cause that would be, I mean, yeah. I can't, that's one of my favorite themes, you know,
Force
theme. That would just be crazy to just use it like once and then go back to his normal thing, or just like have him use his own instrumentation and play it with the, you know, the clarinets that he has his armory of recorders. Then, you know, that could be a kind of a cool thing, but. He did it tastefully, and the music was awesome in this. All right, so now we're back, and then we have our action sequence with the true siege with Din Djarin and Ahsoka going in to save the village and to confront the magistrate, respectively, and it was awesome. And we get to, so before this happens, we get like a layout of, you know, the Mandalorian tells Ahsoka what's in there.
Yeah.
So he name checks all the, you know, the warriors and the AC-350 blasters,
Mm-hmm. Wait. Don't skip over HK-80.
No,
I'm getting there. I'm building up there.
Assassin and droids.
And then he's like, one guy looks like hired gun, you know, whatever. Looks like, yeah. And then, and two HK-87 droids. Assassin. Yeah. Which they did look familiar when you see them earlier on when they're like brandishing the spear, but I knew you
had. Would die. Hatties? Question mark? Was that Hatties they're speaking?
Yeah, they were speaking Hatties because it's like, no chuta. Which is like the same. That's like the same line from the door guard at the hut palace.
Yeah,
Jabba's palace.
So, let me speak to naming or like the development of technology in the Star Wars universe, which seems odd. So, HK droids, hunter killer droids, are pretty well known to old EU and video game fans because the Old Republic or video games, the Knights of the Old Republic, had HK-47 as a playable character, which is the best character in the old Knights of the Old Republic video game. Just very wry, very funny. So that was HK-47. Fast forward, Grant, was it 5,000 years into the future? And we're now up to HK-87. We've gone up 40. We've had 40 versions in 5,000 years.
Hey, man, when it's perfect.
They're perfectionists. Yeah.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. But I love the nod. I was so happy to hear HK-87.
I know we're getting so many video game nods and so many old EU video game nods in the series, which is great. Yeah, those are good. I think actually, so we did a Pillars episode on droids specifically, and I think, Adam, was it you that chose HK as your favorite droid?
Yeah.
Top three or something?
Top three. Always going to be there, yeah.
Right. Cool. So there.
Let's talk about their plan for a second, because when they said that, like, she was like a Mandalorian and a Jedi, they'll never see it coming or something along that line.
Right. But then, like, Ahsoka kind of smiled at the camera. And was like, I roll with it all the time. Like,
so,
all the time.
Yeah.
This was, at this point, feeling very much like a Clone Wars or Rebels episode. So I 100% expected that Din Djarin was going to walk up with her over his shoulders and be like, I brought you your Jedi, and throw her down, and then she'd be alive. No, apparently the plan was for her to just brute strength her way in.
Yeah.
And then he would brute strength his way in.
Yeah.
I still don't get the plan. Was not any type of deception. It was just like, we have really two strong characters, so we don't need to like fake it. We're just gonna both blast our way in.
Yeah, I guess the wall wasn't keeping either of them out, you know.
Right. Nope.
So that was
the one with the force and the one with the jetpack could make it over a wall. That's
yeah. That wasn't really the main thing. And when you see like Ahsoka take care of the whole, you know, portcullis squad.
Right.
You're like, yeah, that was not hard. She can take care of eight dudes, no problem.
Yeah, I guess they just
that was awesome when she throws that rifle, the one guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then just looks at the other one like, now is when you run. Like, that was great.
I mean, I guess the idea is that there's two villains, two big bads. So, you know, they have to, you know, divide and conquer. Maybe that's the plan, is I'll take the Jedi will take the hand-to-hand master, and the Mandalorian will take the blaster expert.
Right. It took both of them to sort of flush all the warriors out of the main sanctum, and then, you know, and then Din Djarin to keep them out so that she could face a magistrate one-on-one. I guess that was the plan.
Yeah.
But that's the way it turned out. So perfect. And it was a chance for both characters to flex and just be awesome. I actually thought the HK droids were going to be tougher to deal with than they were, but there was a moment where she had HK droids on either side of her and she noped out of that situation rather than trying
It felt pretty lethal.
Yeah. And great moment when the HK goes on the gets on the roof. That was cool, you know, animation. We see a Lothcat running around the streets for a second, which is just of course because he's like, and a Lothcat. We need to put a Lothcat in there. He tried to put 100 wolves in there, but like someone was like, discretion's a better part of valor here. How about a Lothcat?
John Favreau just looked at him and shook his head no.
Yeah, right. We don't have the budget. And I was thinking, like, what was like, how much money did it cost just to put that Lothcat in there? Which is like most of their digital budget. But
which, by the way, I mean, maybe this is a little like inside baseball, but we've been talking about budgets a lot with the last several episodes. This was definitely, I mean, this is super action-packed and looked great. This was definitely a budget-saving episode. This is like 99% within the volume.
Yeah, though the set for the town was beautiful.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, and, it all looked good, but yeah, you know, not a ton of like CGI effects or like space battles or giant monsters.
Right. This one. They built like one hut that they hide in the middle of it. And I think that's also the hut that had like the store out in front of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, exciting series there. And then we get the two duels, which we talked about. Yeah. And but we didn't really talk about Ahsoka's duel as much. Beautifully shot. We get the magistrate wielding the Beskar. It sounded amazing. Like the sound design for that was really special. And it was like a part of the story when you flip to the other duel with Din Djarin and Lang.
Yeah.
And you know, and Lang speaking to that, he's like, oh, sounds like it could go either way. And then he's like, eh, sounds like you won.
I loved that. Like, I just, that again, not to go back and back on that exchange, but like, that was so well written, the exchange of Lang and between Lang and the Mando.
Yeah.
He's like, do you think it's, who's going to win? Do you think it's going to be my side or your side?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Like, really good, like, minimal talk, tough guy standoff.
Yeah.
And of course, Mandalorian is like that's.
We should mention that Lang has like a shotgun blaster rifle type deal.
Yeah,
yeah. A scatter gun, I think, is what they call it in Star Wars lore.
So I don't know why you need to pump a laser blaster, but that's fine. I'll take it. It's cool.
Yeah, well, crossbow too. Like, why do you need a crossbow for a laser bolt? But
yeah,
yeah. I think this is like, again, for the video gamers, and probably just to sort of like tick me off, because I'm like, why is there shotguns in Battlefront 2? Like, there's no shotguns in Star Wars. Like, why do? And it's like every assault class player has a shotgun in their arsenal, and they're all over the place. I'm like, this isn't even in the movies. Like,
well, now you can't say that because now it's canon. So because you just have canon. To you just have to be like, all right, fine, you win.
Yeah, which I still do not concede this point at all.
So we covered Grogu's backstory. We didn't cover the magistrate's Morgan Elsbeth's backstory, which they do give us in the episode.
Oh, yeah.
In that she runs this industry that basically built the Imperial Starfleet. This
they
manufacturing company or something of some nature. But her people had also been destroyed. Her cities and her people had been killed in the Clone Wars, which is
right.
Pretty sad. Interesting, very, very dark backstory for that character, but she also proves to be the sort of villain of this story, which is interesting.
We don't know her fate, actually.
I was going to say, right now, I would assume she's alive.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like Ahsoka's way to kill an unarmed
right, person. Especially she needs information, but it wasn't revealed if that information was given or not. And it was, but yeah, we don't know in what manner and how, you know, what deal they struck there.
Yeah. So should we talk about the information? The other big thing where throughout the episode, she was basically Ahsoka was basically asking her, where is he? Where is he? Where's the person? Where's the
And all right. So before we get into the information, who did you think it was going to be before you found out who it was?
Mine's
boring. I thought Moff Gideon.
Yeah, mine's boring too. I thought Moff Gideon. We're both unimaginative.
Yeah, I was leaning Moff Gideon, I think, at the same time.
Yeah.
And second she said the name, I'm like, oh, of course. Like, that's totally makes sense. But I just think about that. Even though I think I had speculated that. Well, it was Thrawn. So she had said Thrawn. Yeah. And I think I had speculated episode before that Thrawn might be the secret big bad of this whole thing. And even I, who speculated that, was just like, nah, it can't be Thrawn.
No, that's a dumb idea. Yeah, it can't be. We're like, that's kind of far-fetched, Adam.
Is I say a lot of crap on this show and don't think, I don't put a lot of it to my, like, memory banks.
Yeah, right. So she's like, show me Grand Admiral Thrawn, which is significant because the last time we saw Ahsoka was at the end of Rebels, and she and Sabine Wren were headed to the unknown regions to try and chase the Purgles that took the space whales that took Ezra Bridger.
People who don't know we're talking about right now.
We're not making this up. We swear.
Yeah, we swear. So that, yeah, Ezra dragged Thrawn with a bunch of space whales out to the outer regions to save something or other.
It's fine. Just because watch five seasons of Rebels. You'll figure it out.
Yeah, it's so worth it. The Rebels is
amazing. It really is. Yeah.
I feel like that's in tune with her motivations right now at this point in the timeline, right?
It works perfectly. Yeah. In the last episode, spoilers, Rebels. Well, not really, no spoilers, but yeah, actually spoilers. So they do a time jump. So Rebels ends right before A New Hope, but they do a time jump to right after Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
And what they're doing. And Sabine Wren and Ahsoka Tano are searching through the galaxy. Now I feel like I probably spoiled that for some people and I feel really bad, but
yep. No, I mean, you probably did if they haven't watched it, but I feel like this season is probably going to spoil that for people. So, like,
yeah, I'll just say that.
We've been talking about Baby Yoda's name for 15 minutes.
I mean,
yeah.
People are pretty much like, past the spoiler wall.
Yeah. I mean, no, I meant like spoiling Rebels.
No,
like,
absolutely.
Like, oh, this is the last scene in Rebels.
You,
but
you absolutely did. But speaking to, but you said spoilers, but here's the thing. Knowing a few people who are listening to this because they want to know backstory about the Mandalorian,
yeah,
are thankful for that. As opposed to like, you know, that's because they're gonna want to know like who's Thrawn, why is she looking for Thrawn,
right? And even then, you'll still enjoy Rebels.
Yeah, it's still an amazing journey.
It's an important point. And so we know she was searching after Ezra, but Ezra was with Thrawn, and we don't see Sabine, we don't see Ezra. But she's still searching for Thrawn. So potentially for 6 years, she's been on this mission trying to hunt down.
Now, question is, would you watch an Ahsoka series?
Yes.
Where she is hunting for Thrawn and Ezra in the unknown
region. You had me at Ahsoka.
You could have stopped the sentence after, would you watch an Ahsoka series?
I don't care what she's doing. She could be making pancakes in like a diner. I'd be like, yeah.
But Grant, I will engage your question as you are trying to pose it. Right. Yeah, I mean, yes, I want an Ahsoka show. I like the fact that it's funny, right? Like, this almost seems like two shows. It seems like the Buffy and Angel crossover you get once a season, where it's just like, I feel like this is an episode of the Ahsoka Tano show that's not happening right now. Like, she's on her own jury, like Din Djarin, and they just happen to meet up on the same planet at the same time, going in completely different directions, which I kind of love. And so, yes, I want to watch her story. And if her story is seeking Ezra, I think that's and Thrawn, I think it's a great story. And I also feel like because she is just another wandering swordsman, like Din Djarin, like very similar of her just getting caught up in this thing. Like, yes. She was going after the magistrate to get answers about Thrawn. And if that was really her number one thing, she would have at the very first episode said, very first beginning of this episode said, yeah, I don't care. Kill as many as you want. I'm coming to get you right this second. She could have hopped up that wall, right? Killed those things and let the assassin droids kill all of the townspeople. But she's a Jedi at heart, right? And she gets, she keeps getting sidetracked by these other, like, well, now I got to free all these people under this petty dictator. Right. And so I love that
just another day show in life.
Yeah, where it's just like, it's just her getting caught up in these things. It is very similar to what the season of The Mandalorian, which ends, and we'll get there in a second, to every single ending of every single episode of the season is, no, go here. No, your true answers lie here. It's been.
Yeah, this is where you want to be.
Right. Her journey into the unknown regions would be something you could easily, make self-contained, right? Each adventure could feel very self-contained into one planet at a time in this search for Ezra.
We'll get there, but that's really interesting, Grant, because I said it earlier, like, metaphorically, but literally these two characters are going in opposite directions in the galaxy right now.
Yeah, she's headed towards
that's so interesting.
The core.
Yeah, he's heading to the core.
Oh, he's the core, and she's headed.
And she's heading to the unknown regions, so they're getting further and further away physically.
Presumably, she has dabbled in the unknown regions for years, but this her pursuit has taken her back here.
So, do we think Corvus is in the outer rim, on the edge of known space?
I wish we had.
Or do we think it's mid rim? Or
I think they're all in the outer.
I haven't seen it in the Atlas, so I don't.
Clicking on Wikipedia, holding. Holding.
So, yeah, I mean, the other question I'd like to pose to you, and we do know that Leslie Headland has an unnamed series coming out that's going to focus on a female character. So this is, I think this is very much in play as to be that that series. I think there's enough room also. So we have like Wandering Gunslinger series, and then we have a Wandering Swordswoman series. I think there's enough room for two of those stories because there's so much fun just going through the galaxy on these missions with these fantastic characters. So that would be great. But where would the Ahsoka series start in time? Like, would it be, I mean, would they start on the last scene of Rebels with like Sabine and Ahsoka sort of? I think it would have to like start before that.
Yeah, like, do from series? This episode.
Yeah, I think you have to start from this episode.
And then do an overlap with the end of Rebels, that epilogue moment with the tower. Get Ahsoka to that space, that place where she's wearing the kind of Gandalf attire. I mean,
maybe you do it through flashbacks, right? Maybe you tell what happened between Rebels and here through flashbacks. But it'd be a weird, because like we know she hasn't found him. And if we're watching this, I was going to say it's like Better Call Saul, but Better Call Saul is an amazing show. So maybe you do that. But I feel like the issue with this is kind of like, great, so we're going to do five seasons where we know she's not going to find her main thing, because the first time we saw her was 5 years later, and she still hasn't found Thrawn.
So you think the first episode has to be the episode like where she leaves Corvus.
And yeah.
You know, and then deals with Magistrate. Yeah, that's interesting, because it's sort of it's a bummer because there's like six wasted years in there that would be really fascinating, plus Sabine Wren. But yeah, it's sort of it's an interesting thing. Or we don't really know where she was right before. Yeah, you're right. Well, because
that's a good point. Where is Sabine in this story?
Yeah, it's a good question. Where is Sabine?
Yeah, that is a very good and valid question.
Did she die? Is she on a parallel mission? Is like Ahsoka chasing after, you know, Thrawn, and Sabine's going after Ezra, you know,
or is Ahsoka chasing after Thrawn for another reason? Meaning that for all we know, she completed the mission 3 years ago.
Right.
Right. And that Thrawn is now she's just after, like, they found Ezra. He's fine. Who knows?
Right.
But my theory is that, similar to what yours, Ben, sounds like you're saying, my theory is that she's still on this path. She's been on this path for five, 6 years.
Well, that would be kind of interesting, because that could lead her pursuit of Thrawn could go right into our sequel trilogy and actually perfectly into
the story. I was thinking about you guys watching this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where we have like running the school.
I just want a broken Ezra hooked up to just like strapped into a machine.
The horror.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Should we get to this final massive reveal and kind of foreshadowing for what could
occur? And our last probably piece of major speculation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. At the very end, I love this moment when Ahsoka says, "You're like a father to him," when Mando and Grogu are just hanging out in the
that ship. Scene where they're just hanging out.
That's again, what I wanted to talk about with the music.
Yeah. Maybe because I'm just a new dad, I don't know, but like, that was the most touching moment in The Mandalorian to the entire, like, to this point, of just like Grogu, I can't do it, Baby Yoda just sleeping, and like him just like looking at him. Like, it was just an amazing moment.
Yeah. And funny. He like takes his time waking him up because like he wants to spend it. Like, so we get the like, it cuts from like the celebration scene, and they do, Goranson does sort of his take on the Ewok celebration, but he does it with all recorders. Like an army of those things, and this, like, it's really jubilant, but then it cuts over to Mando being like, "Time to wake up, buddy, time to say goodbye," which, like, I was just died. And they're still playing the celebratory music, but you're just like, the juxtaposition of like the saddest thing you've ever like heard, and then that music just gets sadder and sadder and sort of dissipates, and then you have this really peaceful moment that you were talking about. And I was just like, I don't care. Like, if he hands off Baby Yoda, I will riot. I'm gonna in a riot.
Is that classical kind of harpsichord music that plays?
No, it's actually a bunch. It's like an army, like a quintet of those recorders, the like woodwind things that are like toot toot toot. There's a lot of tooting.
Right. No, that's happening. But that it sounded like almost like a knight errant, like a knight's kind of music.
Yeah,
bards were to be playing behind him or something.
Yeah, because it was, yeah, it was very like, oh, the village celebrates.
Kind of proving that Mando's more a knight than he is a kind of bounty hunter, really.
Yeah.
He's just helping other, you know, people prosper around the galaxy.
Yeah. So super touching scene, and thankfully Ahsoka refuses to train Grogu again. And and I also listened back on the second viewing. He's like, you have to promise to make sure that he gets his proper training or something. It wasn't like, you need to train him. It was like just ambiguous enough where she's like, you know, she's technically is keeping her oath. But she's just like, I'm not going to do it, but I can, you know, let you find someone who will. And so she directs him to a Jedi temple, which is like, yes. I mean, if you're playing my favorite things, bingo, like Jedi temple searches are, you know, my favorite, Jedi or Sith.
I would say right below Sith.
I especially love ancient temple ruins.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. On Tython. And so he needs to go to this mountaintop and place him there. And there's a conduit there that's a force amplifier. And if he reaches out, chances are someone will respond.
Let's speculate about that, but let's tease the listeners a little bit. Let's hit on Tython for a second, because this is a major name drop from old EU.
Yeah.
Like, so if Octu is like the first Jedi temple, Tython is the first Jedi homeworld, basically.
Yeah.
Many, many temple complexes.
I mean, right. In the old comics and some of the books, I think like the Darth Bane
Rule of Two. Yeah.
It was on this.
Like three more eyes after Jedi.
Yeah. It's the Jedi. Yeah.
Order. Jedi. Yeah.
It's J-E-D-A-I-I order.
Right.
Which is like, basically like the first original version of the Jedi Order, and it's in the deep core.
Yeah, deep core, which is really cool. It's an ice planet.
Yeah.
It wasn't always an ice planet though. I mean, it was originally a forest world, right? Like
I believe so. Apparently, because it was also in Dr. Aphra 40.
Right, which is relatively
frozen then. That's yeah. You know, that it was frozen then. They went to the ice.
But in the old EU, chances are it was a more bucolic planet, and you know, untold ravages from the, you know, Empire's mauling probably. There was also so in that Aphra 40 you're mentioning, which was recent. There's a Jedi confessional, which is like wild, but and I think that's what helped. Like essentially, Aphra beat Vader. Like. She could have killed him, really, but at least she survived an attack by using, you know, her own technical abilities and also the power that place had over Vader. And so it was a Jedi. It was like sort of like where you have to come clean with your sins, like sort of thing against the Force or whatever, which is kind of bizarre. I don't think we'll get into that because it seems a little too dark, but I don't know. Because and also like how will Grogu articulate it, but anyway, so that's what we know about Tython. It's been around a while and it's important, and actually interesting that it's going to take him to the inner core. Like he likes to stay on the fringes and we haven't seen him venture there.
I mean, that's got to be prime New Republic territory, right? So
and he might need to take the Hydean way. We could like see the perils of like taking like, you know, major hyperspace lanes or something like that.
Yeah, I have a feeling we're not going to get to Tython until episode 8.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we have two episodes of him traveling there and getting sidetracked. I don't think you get from wherever we are now. Wherever we're on Corvus, but wherever we are in the galaxy to the inner core in a single episode.
That'd be interesting. Yeah, you feel like there would be something. I mean, it'd be fun if we had like an all space episode.
Yeah. Oh, that would be really neat. Like a bottle episode, like something happens. I feel like something. Yeah, yeah. I feel like the season finale is going to be him on the stone reaching out and someone, and we could speculate who, responding. Yeah. Force.
Well, that's a thing, right? So we know this we're going to see.
I have my guest ready.
Yeah. I mean, so if we're going to go with all of our predictions up to this point, it could be that no one responds.
Yeah, that is valid.
I mean, I think they belong together, and I no one wants to see Grogu go any like go off screen and have his own adventure. Like, we want to see the Mandalorian and Grogu. I just mean me, but I assume everything's
there. Yeah. I don't know. So, you know, Lone Wolf and Cub, you don't want to split them up.
Yeah, they're a team, and they have to be a team, and it's really compelling. But it would be nice if he did reach out and we got an amazing cameo, and that person sort of insinuated, y'all got to stay together. That's your path. Or it's like, you can come find me and hang out, but you have to stay together, or something like that. But
yeah, or I'm not ready to take students yet.
Yeah, that would be interesting. So any theories on who might respond as Grogu reaches out into the ether for Jedi possibly living?
As Ahsoka says, there are very few Jedi at this moment. So instead of like saying what we speculate, should we go from like wildest, like should we do this like Vegas odds, like go with the outside, like what's least likely to most likely?
Oh, man.
Well, I would say... I don't know if we can do that, honestly.
All right.
The most popular Jedi that's alive.
I'm going to say Yoda because he was name checked in the episode. But I mean, okay. Ghost
Yoda. So you're opening this up to we could have like.
As a moment that happens after the final confrontation in the last episode, it's a moment that happens at the very end of the season.
Yeah.
And they just fly to Tython and he touches the Seer Stone and then. I think just Force Ghost Yoda like talks to him and Mando can't see it. I don't think Mando can see it.
I don't know if having two Yodas on the screen, I feel like that's like introducing a proton to an antiproton.
Or he could just say something. What if Yoda just says a line and it goes black or something like that?
Yeah. If it's one line, it'll be greeting. But if it's, I think it could be a short thing and it's going to culminate in have you all you need to complete your training or something like that. Just something to be like, you have all that you need to continue training. And so like, you know, maybe Din Djarin will help him train or something or, you know.
I was very literal.
Or he's just going to have to do it on his own, you know.
I thought she was hinting at Luke Skywalker in that moment.
I think she was definitely hinting at a live person. But I love this. My mind did not connect to Force Ghost. So now I'm just like, oh my God, are we going to get Yoda? Are we going to get Ewan McGregor? Like, who are we going to get? But like,
Qui-Gon's the one that answers. He's like, hey there. He's just like bored and like listening to the
been
like
chilling, you know, as Force Ghost for the past like 30 years. I think the odds on favorite at this point is Luke, and if I'm like almost certain at this point we're gonna get a DH Mark Hamill
or at least that's
a great ending. Now that's a great ending. Mark Hamill de-aged Luke Skywalker, essentially reaching out to Yoda.
It's super expensive, but you can do 5 seconds of that, cut to black. See you in October 2021.
Right. Yeah, and then next season we actually get some DH Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
Or Luke
Sebastian Stan to do it.
I don't think Hart Hamill will let that happen.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll let that happen. I draw no water, but it's just like if he's alive, I don't care how old he is, de-age him.
And you're
put
not
him in for when you need him.
Like I could deal with Alden Ehrenreich.
Hamill is Luke Skywalker.
Well, and he's also portrayed Luke in Episode 6 and Episode 7. So like I could get away with Alden Ehrenreich as Han Solo because all that took place before we ever saw, chronologically saw. But I'd be weirded out by that, where I'm like, especially because you have the technology, I've seen it.
And we already talked about this being the ultimate show, right? To flex.
Yeah.
If Lucasfilm's going to flex, just do the Mark Hamill.
Yeah. Let's give one more go around. And like, this is like Luke at the height of his power, or most interesting to me.
I would be surprised if a lot of people are waiting for this exact moment, a sort of return to sage Luke on screen. It would be kind of a gratifying moment to see him back in action after Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. And I like that.
I would stand up and hoot and holler on my
kids. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's got to be like the ending, like in terms of like, I don't know, for a season that's had so many amazing reveals. And maybe it's just because so much of this was spoiled before the season started for those of us, you know, scouring the, actually not even scouring, like Googling Star Wars.
Right.
That's not even scouring, about all the guest stars. Like, I feel like something needs to happen this season that has not been somewhat indirectly, at least indirectly, spoiled for me. Now yeah. I feel like I'm spoiled, like a spoiled brat. But you know what I'm saying? I feel like there's still something they're going to show us that none of us knew was coming at some way. I love the way they've been doing it. Well, I haven't anticipated.
And so here we are on a podcast talking about Luke, and I'm sure the internet is aflame with people talking about Luke Skywalker. I haven't looked, but I assume that's the way it's going.
I would assume.
That's why we might need a real surprise.
Yeah.
Like Mace Windu.
I wouldn't see. I've been thinking about a Mace Windu Disney Plus series for a long time. Basically, before we ever see him, like when he's young and training, yeah. and like early Mace Windu. I think that would be fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love that too. That, but I mean, would you hate if Samuel L. Jackson was, you know, made some?
Oh, Cyborg too? Mace, like coming back from the streets of Coruscant after having fallen out the window.
Yeah,
I love. Totally I want that. That's a pulpy comic series that would be one of the best-selling series ever. They made it.
So, I mean, the thing to think about is she doesn't say, Ahsoka doesn't say, there's only one other. Like, there are almost none of us. There's very few of us, or something. There are very few Jedi, implying there's more than one Jedi.
Yeah.
So, I mean, outside possibilities, we can rattle some of them off. We have Ezra. We've talked about Ezra a lot. We don't know the fate of Ezra.
Right. I'm inclined to believe that he's still lost, given this episode.
Me too.
I would say Cal Kestis is definitely out there somewhere. And that would be interesting.
I feel bad. What's his mentor's name? What's his master's name?
Sari Junda.
Yeah. Right, because she is still around, spoiler alert, at the end of Jedi Fallen Order.
Right.
We have Leia.
Yeah. She could technically be
Ben
like,
Solo. Ben Solo's in this galaxy.
I think he's young.
He's an infant if he's born.
He's an infant. Yeah,
which I think he would be.
There could be, I mean, dark side possibilities.
Right. We could list some dark side possibilities. I mean,
Snoke could potentially be out there.
We may have seen an early version of Snoke.
Yeah. If it's still a Snoke in a jar, we don't know.
I mean, the Emperor technically is out there somehow.
Sheev's still hanging
around.
That
would be even though usually Sith stick to Sith temples and Jedi stick to Jedi temples, so it should be a light side user.
It should be, but don't forget there's a tracking device on that Razor Crest.
Right. Well, yeah, that's one thing I wanted to, so I think that's why we got the MacGuffin of the Beskar's spear, because at some point there will be a bat, like Gideon's gonna pull out the dark saber,
right?
And the only way, Din Djarin's gonna be able to fight him is with that spear.
I assumed he was gonna immediately melt that spear down to make like shin guards.
I thought the exact same thought.
But Ben, I think you're spot on. You're right. They need a weapon to deflect the dark saber. Yeah, that's exactly right. Which is gonna be amazing.
Yeah. Which would be cool. Yeah, that'll be. So then we'll have a light side spear user sort of, that'll be cool.
Do you think we're done with Ahsoka in The Mandalorian?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also do.
Which I kind of like. I know that sounds controversial, but like, I think Ben, you had mentioned it last week where you're just like, I want to see Ahsoka, but if she's here, if she goes on the journey, then it becomes the Ahsoka show, right? Like, it's not The Mandalorian.
I'm more interested in Ahsoka than
Djarin,
and just because I think just the fighting style is so interesting. Well, I haven't seen lightsaber combat like that in a long time. Yeah. That was beautifully done. It was basically like the prequels, essentially.
Yeah.
It was, Filoni was sort of, taking influence from the prequels and, doing homages to the prequels.
I did feel that the duel between the Magistrate and Ahsoka was a little more old school, or a little more original trilogy style, where it was like more classic, Japanese samurai fighting.
Long pauses, weaknesses. I really loved it.
How she bounced the spear and like made it ring out. That was really cool. And
it was great to see that old style back for a while. Because I mean, don't get me wrong, the prequel trilogies probably have the best lightsaber battles, and I mean, they do in terms of choreography, but like there's something about those, that old school, just samurai. Yeah.
And then visually at that point, I would just want to watch what Ahsoka does every episode. So,
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, I'm really hoping that's the Leslie Headland show, but, you know, but if it's Afro, that's cool too, or something else. But I feel like they're not done with Ahsoka. This is just going to be that tease. So people are like, who is that? I want to watch them. Why can't we watch Jedi more often on the show?
Yeah. You know, I think, I mean, the inside dope from Disney Plus and from Lucasfilm is that we need to spin off The Mandalorian ASAFP.
Yeah.
I mean, it is like the biggest show on Disney Plus. It is the thing that has reinvigorated Star Wars in a lot of ways. And this is not a takeaway from the sequel trilogies, which I think did a good job. But the sequel trilogies didn't, I don't think, pulled in a ton of new viewers, right? Like, it didn't invigorate a new generation. The Mandalorian has, right? Like, people are watching this who are new to Star Wars and are young. And so that's the other thing. I feel like every episode, I feel like they have set up a possibility for a spinoff, except maybe episode two, because I don't think we're going to see a Frog Lady standalone series, but maybe. Right. But I mean, like, right, every episode feels like this could be a backdoor pilot to another show.
Yeah, I really don't see a Cara Dune spinoff, and not because of the, you know, all of her inflammatory comments.
I agree, but that was the running favorite for a long time. There's so much coming out that was
why. So
it would be a really boring show, man.
Why not just continue The Mandalorian, but then just switch it over to Bo-Katan as the main character? Like, do a flip.
Because you can't have two shows running in two seasons to get your ship.
You stopped Din Djarin's story.
You stopped Din Djarin's story. No, Bo-Katan.
It's just blue. You get like a blue.
I think people are too. I'm too attached to Din Djarin. You know, his character And I think a lot of people feel that way. It would be really hard to do that. You know, at the beginning of the season, though, it would have been like, Cobb Vanth. I mean, I don't know. It felt like it was going to go that way, or they could. And they probably don't know. They could always do that. But
every few, or, you know, 3 to 5 seasons, then it's to a different Mandalorian.
Different Mandalorian.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I want at least another 3 seasons with Djarin. I'm being selfish, but I just do. Like, right now, I don't know. I adore that character, and I feel like they haven't come to fruition yet. This still feels like late first act, you know, of this.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Yeah, he's got a journey that
there's a lot of development ahead for Din Djarin.
Because I'm fine if you kill him off, but like, it needs to mean something. And at this point, I don't know what a meaningful death for that character would be like, because it hasn't built enough.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's going to be, these next episodes are going to be great. And it could be that we do get two sort of, you know, weird offshoot episodes. And then I think they're all going to sort of come together where it's going to be like, finally. I mean, don't you think that, Moff Gideon's going to go to Corvus? Or do you think he's just going to be like, okay, now he's left Corvus, so we're going to keep following him?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Don't you think he has to do his due diligence and see if they was left behind?
What if Gideon attacks them on Tython or something like that?
That seems obvious, or that seems like likely.
But yeah, I wonder if we're going to have some parallel storytelling for the next couple episodes, right? Where you have the Mandalorian's journey, and then you do cut back to Corvus with
Ahsoka getting attacked by Gideon.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'm really kept expecting this season, and we still might get it, of a non-Mandalorian Mandalorian episode, because that seems to be what they do a lot. Like, when this episode started, I was thinking, like, oh, is this going to be, like, all Ahsoka? Like, are we just going to see where she's at in her story before the Mandalorian shows up? So maybe you do get that next episode where it's just, like, because this is what they do. They tease, right? Because episode one, he's supposed to go to what's it called to meet Bo-Katan, right? Or meet another Mandalorian, right? So episode one ends, you're supposed to go meet a Mandalorian. Episode two, side quest, Frog Lady. Episode three, we're back on the track, go meet Ahsoka Tano. Episode four, no, wait a minute.
Side quest.
Episode five, you're back on the main thing. So episode six has to be a side quest, right? Yeah. And it might be a side quest in the way that, oh no, we're still on Corvus, and here comes the Star Destroyer out of hyperspace.
Right.
Above Corvus.
And I think in last season episode, like in episode 7 ended with a showdown with Moff Gideon, and yeah. episode 8 was trying to survive that.
Yeah.
And that's what we could be getting. We could get again. Only basically now we have a new Parker. Cadre of heroes. Bo-Katan's there. And
maybe Cobb Vanth, maybe Frog Lady.
I don't know how. I don't know. I don't know how Cobb Vanth or Frog Lady would get there, but you know, maybe you know Gideon, or we're gonna get the Rebel. Like we could get Captain Teeva show up and sort of been like, I've been following you, and he's now on the trail of the, you know, the Empire, and they help out. And I mean, so this is the thing we talked about, Cara Dune and like her offshoot. I think the most interesting part of her character for this season is she is the connecting tissue to the Rebel Alliance.
Yeah.
And in more ways than just the fact that like they like she was in it, but like, in that last episode, when I watched it again, she says things that like a rebellion officer would say.
Yeah.
You know, just sort of like, we need to report this, or this need, you know, there was something about when they saw the cloning facility, she's like, they're going to be after you. We need to listen to those messages. She's like, we have to, because she wants to know what the Empire is up to. And it's that connecting tissue is cool. And that's why I think that character is going to be important, because they're going to want to keep tethered to the Rebel Alliance in some way too, because it makes it interesting.
Well, you need that storytelling, right? Because you need the fact that he is now, he's somewhat between two worlds and outside the law, and you need the law there, right? You need the marshals, you need the federal marshals, and the federal marshals in this cowboy story are the is the rebels or the New Republic.
So anyways, I think, Grant, to go back to your point, like you said, like, wouldn't it be cool if they ended up on Tython? Yes. Yeah. Like, that would be dope. I think that, I don't know, that's probably the most likely place, I think, but I don't know. Eventually,
I was thinking about where those dark troopers could attack and where it could be most, you know, ominous.
I think it's going to be Tython.
If it's on ice, that's pretty threatening.
Yeah.
Like a lot of ice shattering around them.
And visually, storytelling, you have these black figures against a white world. Like, it's going to be visually stunning. And I think that's what it is. I think that is the end of episode 7. Is like, he's there, he's at the temple, and then
they're surrounded again.
Yeah,
that would be cool. And it's pretty meaningful if it happens at the Jedi temple. It's basically like, you know, the Empire has desecrated all these sites in such horrific ways, and then now this is just another example of how, you know, cruel and kind of irreverent the Empire can be by just deploying these like killer hunter killer droid,
right? Destroying the temple and like
And hey, tinfoil outside speculation: if you ever wanted to bring Dr. Aphra into a live action show, here's your chance. You're at a temple.
I was gonna say, so far, like, we've been making pretty conservative guesses, and they've surpassed even like more what we really like thought. So everything's on the table right now.
Agreed.
I'm looking through my old notes or all my notes here to make sure we got it. I think we touched it, but I don't know. There's still the mind can travel down these pathways for a while. There's going to be a lot of great stuff there, no matter what.
I mean, guys, Grogu.
Grogu.
Grogu or Grogu?
Grogu. Grogu. I keep adding that K, and I don't know why I do that, because that's in my mind. But Grogu.
Grogu. It's like you grow goo.
Yeah. At least they didn't give him a Y name.
It's growing, and it's mostly goo still because it's a baby.
At least they didn't make him like Yodel or something. Like.
Yeah.
Yoda Yaddle Yeedle.
Yeah, Yeedle. Yeah, good name. Solid name overall.
Yeah.
Take it. Man, I had something else. Anything else you guys are going through? I mean, I found out that.
Oh,
if they do go back
the way Magistrate Elsbeth wields that quarterstaff, that spear.
Yeah.
And the way her hair is done, it reminded me of Rey. I was like, is there a connection here? Is there a wild tinfoil connection here?
It's an interesting call, because she does have the three buns, right?
Yeah. Three buns, and then just a masterful with the quarterstaff. And I was like, oh, what is this? This is fascinating.
That'd be wild if she was like first gen clone or something.
Because we don't know where
the Emperor
Rey's mother hails from, and then we do know that her father was a strand cast clone of the Emperor.
Right. Yeah. So she could be another strand cast.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I didn't think of that.
That's like well trained, but not in the Force. That'd be kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's true. Just as a shout out, the actress is, or actor is, Diana Lee Insanto. Her father, she's trained in lots of various forms of martial art. She is Bruce's goddaughter.
Bruce Lee's goddaughter?
Yeah, apparently her father trained with Bruce Lee at the Jeet Kune Do.
Jeet Kune Do, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's why her real name is Lee.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, so, but she's like, she's acted, been an actress or an actor since the mid-80s, been in so many things, but it's really interesting because she like splits her time between being like just straight up an actor and then also a stunt person. So it's really interesting. Like she started out in moonlighting. Like she was in 7 episodes as an actor in the show Moonlighting in the mid-80s.
Oh, wow.
And then she was in like Buffy for like 7 episodes as stunts. So like she goes back and forth. It's really interesting. Does a lot of writing and directing as well. So she's been, you know, pretty much, like, I was just looking through. She's been in pretty much every TV show and movie you could think of.
Right. Like whoever's doing casting and is amazing. It's just like really, really outside of the box picks. All these comedians are fantastic. And then all these, I mean, Carl Weathers is a genius. Like, I mean, he's fantastic, but was sort of like cast to the wayside. And then like, he's just shining as bright as he ever
He grounded that first season of Mando, basically.
Yeah.
You had Mando, and then the only other character you had was Greef Karga. And he grounded that entire series, much like Han does in A New Hope.
Yeah.
And he brought it to life. And that character's development is fascinating in terms of what's going to happen in Navarro's future.
Yeah. I also caught the name of the Asian actor who is he's Governor Wing, the one that took over Corvus after they reclaimed it. And I think the actor's real name is Wing Tao Chow. And I'm probably mispronouncing that, but that's his name. But I don't know if they do go back to Corvus or if they do shoot a scene where Moff Gideon goes to Corvus, we'll probably see him again.
Yeah. And great little arc for that character, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Pivotal. And then like, oh, by the way, he was clearly the leader probably of this place before.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was, even as they were being persecuted, he was helping to hold it
together. Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, a very Clone Wars esque story. Mm-hmm. Like they did
He saved Mando's life. He was like, "Look out behind you!" And Mando,
yep,
360 no scopes that HK droid.
Awesome, man. I don't know. We'll see. I'm excited. It could be another. I can't wait till what happens next. There could be more cameos, like obviously the Jedi, but like maybe there's something else random that's gonna pop in here. I have no doubts that they seek to delight and surprise us. So we'll see. But
All right.
Lovely episode. Thanks everyone for listening to us this week. Can't wait to talk about Mando again next week. And I think we are going to talk about the Empire Strikes Back from a Certain Point of View book. We're going to do a couple more chapters there. And we're going to do a couple comics, I think, too.
Yeah, we'll do a Kyber Crystal Comics Corner. And there'll probably be some news between now and then the cover, I would assume.
Right. So just one episode this week, but probably 2 episodes next week because we can't help ourselves. love you all. Thanks for listening to us, and may the Force be with you always.
This is Grex Kondak signing off. For the latest breaking news, follow @CoreWorldNews on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you and good night.
Remember, the Force will be with you always.